Hey everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I don't know if any of you felt this way, but I always assume that when the year turns over, so from 2025 to that first day in 2026, that all is going to be smooth sailing, or at least that things are going to calm down for a while. Well, I woke up this morning to a huge leak in the house where I'm house sitting, so I've been dealing with that all day. But I thought to myself, why would I ever think things are going to slow down or calm down? I mean, it's the start of a new year, and yes, it's nice to turn that time over, but really, does it make a big difference in our outer world? And so far, I'm saying that 2026, at least for me, is proving to be just as challenging so far as 2025. So I hope that your beginnings of your new years are going smoother. You know, there are worse things happening than a leaky roof, but yeah, it doesn't help. That's all I'm going to say. This time in this episode, I'm introducing you to the very funny and very gracious David Hunter. David is the founder of Global Phytoplankton, which is a company that's bringing marine phytoplankton to human and animal wellness. And he has a really great story. He actually shares several different miracle events or magical events in his life, and he kind of tells how they've shaped his life. But also, David, I would say, you know, he's one of those people that is close to the soul of the world. And you'll hear those miracle stories right at the very end. And they have to do with his parents who have already passed on. There's no doubt in my mind that David is a creative soul, that he's an inspired soul, that he's someone who believes in life. And so, you know, with that introduction, I can't wait for you to meet him and enjoy his personality and enjoy just who he is. All right, without further ado, here's my interview with David Hunter.
It's Monday morning. They call me into the office and they hit me with this path-shattering news. And I was going, okay, whatever. You guys made a decision. Like, it's like 28 against one. Like, you know, you guys know what you're doing. Like, cool. I'm cleaning my desk out. Okay. Cleaning my desk out, totally in shock. And the phone rings. But then I was like going, one more for the road. I'm taking one more phone call.
Are you as a human being? I mean, if you had to get up on a stage and introduce yourself, how would you do that?
Geez, well, yeah, that's a really good question. Well, I think that I'm definitely aware of my existence. That's for sure. And I guess that's all part of life's journey to find out who we really are, right? So I would think that, you know, I'm a born entrepreneur for sure. I like to take things apart and figure out what makes them work and why. You know, there's a lot of things in life that I'm questioning, say, the intentions of certain things. What's behind it. But I would think that, you know, I'm just pretty much, you know, and I love music. Definitely music touches my soul. So I think like, I definitely am here enjoying a journey. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, obviously when I was younger, if somebody would have ever told me that I would be working on marine phytoplankton as my life's journey, I would have, number one, asked them, what is marine phytoplankton? And, you know, number two, they'd be like, you're a marine phytoplankton. Do you see your report card in science? You know, no, never would have thought possible. So, I mean, I think I'm living proof that if you want to make God laugh, you tell him your plans.
Oh, totally. You know?
And I think I'm just probably, I'm pretty much an entrepreneur at heart, but I like to create things from scratch. I think that that's my MO.
Amazing.
I like to pioneer things that nobody else has done.
That's a great MO. I love asking this next question because it's, you never know what you're going to get, but when you were a kid, what did you dream of becoming?
Oh, a major league baseball pitcher. I was absolutely obsessed with Nolan Ryan. I thought that he was just the absolute epitome of just being in shape at an older age, like just being very versatile, you know, just so good at like such specific things. You know, he really inspired me as a kid. And actually, when I was in, when they, again, going back to my grades in school, the counselor was like, well, you know, your grades were concerned. And I go, well, yeah, I'm going to be a Major League Baseball pitcher. So like, like, it doesn't matter.
Now, did you did you just not like school, or was there something else going on? You know, were you easily distracted? It sounds like you had other things on your mind.
That's right.
Baseball pitcher. So, how did that happen that you evolved into what you're doing now?
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. So I think, okay, I'll preface with this is I think people are wired differently, right? Like when you have a band, you know, you have a drummer, a bass player, a guitarist, a singer, a pianist, a oboe player, a trombone player. Everybody has a role to play, I think, in this ecosystem, like the jungle or whatever, right? Plants, everything, right? I was definitely not cut out for anything academia. I just found it absolutely, like when, again, like I did really good in art. I did good in music. I did good in PE, again, hence the baseball thing. Like I did really good in certain things. But then when it came to like the academia side, I was completely bored out of my mind. So I didn't apply myself. And so everybody was so worried about my grades, but they didn't look at all the good things that I was doing. Like I was able to pick up an instrument and be able to play it without like thinking, you know, it was inside of me. I would be able to draw and I'd be able to mold plaster and like, you know, kind of do things like that. So I think that, you know, school I find is one dimensional. It's for like a certain type of person, and maybe they try and do some shop classes and some other things like that. But I think that like if I was to design school, I think that, you know, maybe we all start in kindergarten into a little bit, but then there should be some branches of like, you know, hey, if this child likes to work with their hands or he's an artist or whatever, because not everybody needs to know how to dissect a frog, right? Or like what a parallelogram is, you know, like we let, you know, and like, because we're all a little bit different, and then maybe would things be more efficient? Again, going back to me dissecting the way things work, right? And I was absolutely bored out of my mind. I felt school was prison. You know, and I'm not knocking school, but I'm just not wired for that. So it was basically what saved me in school was at least we had shop classes in the last 2 years. And then I was able to have two band classes. So I had all these electives that saved me. But, you know, as soon as I was out of school, like that was the last thing on my mind. I wanted to learn, but it's not that I didn't like learning. I just didn't want to learn about the things that they taught in school.
Okay, fair. That makes sense. Totally. Absolutely. That makes sense. And, so can I ask you what instrument you played?
I played the baritone sax.
Wow. Okay. So were you so I have to tell you, I have to confess that when I was in high school, one of my favorite parts of the hometown football games was when the band came out onto the field and at halftime, because I never knew what was going to happen. I mean, there was always it was like very artistic and I loved it. And then you had the color guard and sometimes the cheerleaders would get involved. Did your school do all that as well? Were you part of that?
No, well, I'm in Canada, so we didn't really have that marching band. I used to see it actually on TV. It's a very Americana thing, I find, which I think is amazing. I mean, I used to fantasize about like, you know, being in something like that, right? Yeah, no, we were doing more like what we would call a jazz band. So we would play kind of more rocky stuff. You know, we would have to do like the Beethovens and the Tchaikovskys like during school, but then we'd have the rock stuff like later on, right? So that was kind of more my stuff. But yeah, I love the American marching bands. Like, I mean, what a, because yeah, not only are they playing the instrument, okay, which is hard, but they're like walking in sequence with their legs. And yeah, I mean, I mean, also too, hats off to the people who teach that.
Agreed.
I mean, like, seriously, like, I mean, and yeah. And then the cheerleaders are getting thrown up and down and they have it all choreographed. Yeah. I mean, pretty amazing stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, hey, you know what? The, our countries are similar, but there's some things in America, like when you're a Canadian, you're watching, you know, like baseball, for an example, is a great, another great one. Like, you're just like, wow. Like,
yeah,
it's really, there's things that America does that's actually just so impressive, you know, that they, again, the things that America's into, they're really good at.
Some things.
Yeah. I'm not saying everything. You know, but we all have our strengths and weaknesses, right? Everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I love Canada so much. I have to tell you, I have some serious bucket list items when it comes to Canada. One is to go up to the Queen Charlotte's and explore the Haida Gwaii up there. And then the other is to, well, a couple others. I would like to spend some extensive months in the Maritimes, Prince Edward Island specifically. And then I'd so die to take the train from Vancouver, BC across Canada, because I've heard that trip is fabulous. Just as a way to seeing the country is so immense. And I just thought, you know, I'd like to maybe stop off in Banff for a while, or, you know, I don't think they allow you to do that. Once you're on the train, you're on the train, but I do think about these things. And also, you know, my uncle used to be chief engineer of the city of Vancouver. So I spent some time in Vancouver and Stanley Park, and it's just so beautiful up there. Canada is really wild and woolly, and that's partially why I loved it. But so Canada, you guys, I mean, art and beauty and food and all of it. So let me ask you a question. When you were a kid, and, you know, you were in school, you were in band, did you find yourself with a predilection to, you know, maybe you'd see something and you'd take it apart to see how it worked?
In what context?
Well, you know, sometimes when I've interviewed people before, they would say, you know, I loved taking things apart to see how they worked. And so they would see maybe, I don't know, some gadget that their father had bought, and they'd unscrew everything and look inside and try to figure out, wait, what does this do? What does this do? That kind of thing.
Well, hey, I'll tell you actually something that I did.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. My dad, okay. Do you know what a skillet is?
Yes.
Like it's kind of like, you know, like it's like a frying pan, but then it's got the things up like that. So it's got like, so you can put a little bit of sauces in there and things like that. Okay. Well, then when he used to cook bacon, he used to put an ashtray on the underneath one of the corners. Okay. So to get the grease down. And I legit, okay, in the early 90s, went to a patent office to talk about getting one of those skillets and having telescoping legs on them, so then you can then do it and then have a grease trap, then so then when you're cooking bacon or something, burger or whatever, that the grease can go into the thing, right? And I didn't have any money, like I was just a kid. And the patent said, well, I need $10,000 to have it drawn up. And then there's this and then this and this, which, of course, turned into the George Foreman grill. Right. I legit had that idea like 15 years before that thing showed up. Like, oh, my God, like I can't, if I would have had the patent on that, like I would have been a gazillionaire. They would have had to buy the patent off me. Yeah. But I legit like because I was watching my dad do that with an ashtray.
Wow. Yeah. Your dad sounds very inventive. Was he?
No, not really. He just was like, you know, he was just doing that. Like, you know what I mean? Just trying to like get the grease off the thing. Cause then, you know, you're just cooking everything in the grease, right? Or like the burger meat or whatever. So that's, and then, you know, he would scoop it up with a spoon and then put it into like a mug.
Yeah.
And then they would let it solidify and then they would throw it away. Right. But like, yeah, but I was watching them do that for years and I go, well, what if they had a telescoping thing there that would have a grease trap? I know, isn't that crazy?
Oh Oh my God. Yeah. That's amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you have a very visual mind, and in that you can see a problem or an issue, and then internally you can visualize what is needed. You just need $10,000, I guess, apparently.
At the time. Yeah. 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 I just needed 10,000, but you know, like when you're 17 years old, like $10,000 is a little hard to come by when your parents are just, you know, working for the government. Right. So, yeah, so that was unfathomable at the time. Like, you know, $10,000 back then would be like 35 today.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm sure it's
a lot of money.
It's only gone up, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't even want to know.
Let me ask you, so this work that you're doing now, how did you get into it? How did you get interested in it? Was it an affinity for the ocean? I don't know. I'm just really intrigued because I absolutely believe in the work that you're doing, and that chlorophyll is, I mean, magical, powerful, something that we're not utilizing to the best of our ability. But so how did you get into this work?
Oh, by an absolute divine fluke. It was completely divine. So I can tell you the story. Yeah. It's actually really crazy how I got into this.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. I'm going to try and fast track, but okay. So I used to be cutting cedar shingles. I got into the mill out in BC. So I'm originally from BC. So when you're talking about going to Vancouver, I know that well, because that was where I grew up. And actually, I live in New Brunswick right now, which is the neighbor of Prince Edward Island. I was just in Prince Edward Island last weekend. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Is it as ridiculously beautiful as everyone says?
PEI? Prince Edward Island?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's not like mountains like Vancouver, but it has a vibe. And it's rolling hills, and they're just really calm. And it's just, yeah, it's the golf capital of Canada. They have like the best golf courses there. There's more golf courses per capita in PEI than anywhere else. I mean, it's not a big island either, right? It's probably like one fifth the size of Rhode Island, you know?
Wow.
Like it's pretty small. Right. But it's its own province. Yeah. But no, it's got its own vibe for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, you know that it's like super well-known touristy place too. Right. Like, I mean, people from all over the world go there.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And I can see why. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's not Banff or Jasper kind of thing. Like it doesn't have like that. Or Whistler, that iconic status. Well, it does, but it's an iconic status for a different reason.
Yes.
And I think it's to have this peaceful, chill kind of vibe, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And
jealous.
I'm an hour away. Yeah. So, and New Brunswick is kind of PEI light.
Okay.
Or actually we're kind of like I call it like where I live, we are the Maine of Canada.
Okay.
We are totally got a Maine vibe going on here.
Okay.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, so because we have that ocean lobster kind of thing, right? But yeah, but PEI is its own thing, yeah, for sure. And so I was cutting cedar shingles and I became self-employed. And actually, you want to talk about taking things apart? Okay, this is what I did. So a cedar shingle machine. So cedar shingles are like on a roof of a house and on a sidewall. Okay, let's just establish that. In British Columbia, we cut it with Western red cedar, which is a majestic tree averaging about 200 years old when it comes to process to what we were cutting, okay? We were cutting cedar shingles with a saw that was 4 feet in diameter, and the saw blades were kind of like counter like this, okay? Like they weren't straight. They were just because it kicks the sawdust, okay? Now, the saw, because it was so big, it was really thick. And so in one cord of Western red cedar, you know, you would get about 700 square feet of shingle material. Okay. If you can follow me. Okay. And this machine that everybody used, that was pretty much designed in the late 1800s. Okay. And they hadn't changed it. Well, yeah, you kind of know where this is going. So like, I got together with an engineer in Vancouver Island that basically asked the question, and that, why don't we cut it with a bandsaw? Right? Because what happens in the old saw method is that, like, there was so much waste, because basically the blade of the saw was almost the width of the shingle. So you'd almost be one-to-one waste. So, between me and him, he had the eye, just happened to be there watching this all unfold. We used a bandsaw, which cut a shingle with the exact same quality as of the circular saw, and we would get 1,200 square foot with the exact same amount of wood. 500 more square foot of shingles from a 200-year-old tree. So we're like basically almost like, what's it called? Like, we're honoring the tree.
Yeah.
Right? Right? That 500 square foot out of a cord is a lot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so, yeah. And so we did that, and we became very successful because we were cutting way more shingles from the same amount of wood, because the price of a cord was the price of a cord for us or for somebody else. But we got that much more out of it. So we became very successful. Yeah. It's all, but this is how we've been doing it for the last 120 years, right? There's always a way to make something better is basically the moral of that story. Okay. Well, that mill burnt down because my neighbor decided to do some welding and not use the hose to hose it down, and burnt the whole freaking block down. Yeah, that was crazy. And I had one of my buddies from high school working for me, and we started a bottled water company. And we actually partnered with, you were talking about the Haida Gwaii. The reason why I know about that, I worked in Prince Rupert for a while, which is basically the gateway to Haida Gwaii. And I represented a bottled water facility in Hyder, Alaska, which is about 300 miles north of there, the most southeast town of Alaska. And they had a bottled water company, but they didn't have a brand. And we came up with this idea called a Drinka Water. Our brand was called Drinka. Like, we trademarked it and everything. And we put it in bottles, and I sold it down into Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana. Like, I distributed to beer distributors down there, and turned into a thing, became a national brand. So I did that for a while. So get this. So on March 20th, 2004, I met a gentleman that was at a trade show in California that had this marine phytoplankton paste that was for shellfish food. And the reason why I went up to his booth is because he said that he was from Nanaimo, BC, and I was at the time living in Duncan, BC, which was on Vancouver Island. And I just went up to him because we were only like 30 miles away from each other geographically, and we were in Anaheim, California. So I just went up there as another Canuck, like, to be like, oh, hey, like, you know, what are you doing here, right? And he's like, oh, I got this phytoplankton paste and, you know, blah, 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 shellfish food, all that. Well, so 15-minute conversation, mostly just talking about how we were there and all that. And I think he was at the wrong show. And his sales manager asked me what I did. And I said, oh, I'm with Drink of Water. I'm just looking to expand my distribution. He knew about Drink of Water. And he said, hey, I might need your advice one day for some sales and distribution, because we're like, obviously we're here, we're trying to find sales and distribution, right? And I go, well, that's universal. I said, yeah, sure, here's my card. Walked away. 15-minute conversation, didn't know what phytoplankton was, like, blah, blah, right? Okay. So that was March 20th, 2004, okay? Now, July 5th, 2005, okay, so a year and a bit later, I went into my office. And we needed to raise capital, and I had a bunch of partners there and all that other stuff. Well, they decided to buy me out and use my shares to raise the capital, and I didn't know it was coming. And And it wasn't really a hostile takeover. It was just more like just sometimes that that's what's needed in order to keep the company going. And the investors wanted my shares and blah, blah, blah. Well, I didn't know it was coming. I was totally in shock. And normally July 5th is a long weekend there in America. But for us in Canada, our Independence Day is on July 1st. So we were working that day. It's Monday morning. They call me into the office and they hit me with this path-shattering news, because I thought I was going to be in bottled water forever. Started it from scratch, blah, 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 right? And I was going, oh, okay, well, whatever. You guys made a decision. Like, it's like 28 against one. Like, you know, you guys know what you're doing. Like, cool. Give me my check. See you later. I'm cleaning my desk out. Okay, cleaning my desk out, totally in shock, and the phone rings. And I go, and I'm like, yeah, I'll let Gary get that. I'm done. I don't work here no more. But then I was like going, one more for the road. I'm taking one more phone call. And I picked up the phone, and it was the sales manager from the Unique Sea Farms from the show on March 20th, 2004, asking me if I can consult for them because they want to expand their distribution. And so what is super crazy about that is if they would have called me before, I would have not taken it because I thought I was still working there. And if they would have called 5 minutes later, I would have been gone and I would have never got that phone call. Like to the minute. Isn't that insane?
That is insane. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? So like, yeah, so of course, like I'm going to go do it, right? Because it was so random. So then I go there. Okay. So it's the shellfish food, this phytoplankton, is when they feed the shellfish this phytoplankton, the shellfish is 2.5 times bigger than shellfish on traditional commercial feed. So just they wanted me to help sell it to other shellfish farmers, right? Okay. The guy who started it, who was cultivating the phytoplankton, started to eat it as a joke. And he had mesothelioma cancer. And he also had mesothelioma and he also had type 1 diabetes. After 2 weeks, he was like, hey, my blood sugar is normal. I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, oh. Who would have thought cancer medication would work for diabetes, right? He's like, yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, blah, blah. Well, he went for an operation for a talcum treatment because mesothelioma is a lung cancer induced by asbestos exposure. And then what happens is that water enters the lungs and then they kind of can drown in their own fluid. So they do this operation midstream to stop them from drowning. Right. When they went in there, they found a cotton white substance along the pleural lining of his lungs. They didn't know what it was. They sent him back and they ended up doing a bunch of tests on him. And there was zero cancer in his body. What? First ever reported case of mesothelioma, like ever doing something like that. They totally don't know what's going on. Right. Well, he attributed it to the phytoplankton. And I don't know how he did it, but it made the front page of the newspaper in the local newspaper and made the fourth page of the provincial newspaper, which is like 4 million circulation. So I came into work one day, phones are like ringing off the hook from all these desperate people looking to take the phytoplankton that Tom had taken, who's my boss, and we gave it to them for free. We gave it to hundreds of people, okay? Now, like I'm thinking I'm on candid camera, right? Like this is crazy. I'm here to sell shellfish food. I don't even like shellfish. I'm just here to make money. And so all these people come, desperate people from all over the province, including Washington State, actually. People were crossing the border coming up picking this because we're close to Washington. And so we gave it to them. Well, I ended up taking the phytoplankton. I had a life-changing experience with energy. My headaches going away. I had a candida rash forever that like wouldn't go away, totally went away. I used to have like a nasal drip and allergies like that totally, like within a really short period of time too, mind you. Now, where my life changed. Okay, so that was cool, but I wasn't ready to change my life into phytoplankton. But where it changed was a month later when all these people were coming back telling me about miraculous stories of healing that, like, you basically say I'm the biggest quack job in the world. Like, we're talking healings from fibromyalgia, Crohn's colitis, dandruff, arthritis, erectile dysfunction, and cancer, like, just crazy stuff. And I'm going, like, what in the world is going on? Like, I mean, and we're not, Kristen, I'm not talking two or three, okay? I'm talking almost everybody. And I'm going, and this doctor shows up from Qualicum Beach, a guy named Dr. Bob Rowe, who's the reason I'm here, really. And he came in and was telling me about all the healings that he was seeing at his practice. And of course, I'm witnessing this in real time. And he goes, I think that Tom just accidentally discovered the holy grail of nutrition. He goes, just think about it. He goes, marine phytoplankton is the first food on the planet. It is the base nutrient, the beginning of life in the ocean. The sun penetrates the surface of the ocean, and this garden of vegetables is born between the combination of sunlight and seawater. It is literally pure nutrition. The entire ocean is fed from marine phytoplankton. Like, all this krill that they get from these omega-3s, the omega-3s come from the plant. It's a plant life. It's vegan. It's sustainable. And he goes, I think what is going on. So I'm like, okay, Dr. Rowe, okay, makes sense. And he goes, I think what is going on is that all these people that are sick are just malnourished because the food does not deliver all the nourishment that we need, but this is literally pure nutrition, and it's so small. Like, this plant is like 1.2 microns, which is the third of a blood cell. He goes, I think what's going on is that they're eating this nutrition, and it's going directly into the engine of the cell, which is called the mitochondria, which then now just ignites and now is alive. Because people who are, like, sick, they're not alive. They're kind of like, right? So this just fires everything up. And then the body is working, and then the immune system fires up, and then it can heal itself in such a short period of time. He goes, I think that this is like one of the biggest, craziest discoveries like in nutrition history. And so that was like the moment I'm like, well, this needs to get to the people. And it's been a 20-year journey, and like, it's just kind of like getting known now because there's a lot of regulatory, because there was no, like, we had to, of course, get it approved from the government, which takes forever because it was never a known food source. So we had to prove that it was safe and people weren't going to get gills, you know, by eating it and stuff like that. So we, you know, but that's why I live in New Brunswick, actually. So this happened in Vancouver. Well, Vancouver is one of the most expensive places in the world to live. You know, my kids were really small. I couldn't live in Vancouver and do this. So I moved to New Brunswick where things are a lot cheaper. So I lowered my cost of living by 60% and then reinvested everything that I got from my bottled water into this business. And yeah, I've been doing it now for 20 years. And, you know, we've been responsible for helping a lot of people. And the word's just slowly getting out.
Holy cow. I have to say that, to be honest, I might want gills because I think it would be really fun to swim in the ocean and not have to carry a tank. I mean, I don't know, but I am a Pisces. So that's just,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you
that's go. Just yeah. Something that maybe I might want to do. oh my gosh. That's really funny. It's like, you know, I see all these pharmaceutical ads in the US. Okay. They are insane, all right, because I'm always waiting as a kind of comic relief for the may cause, and then the list of things that may cause a heart attack, may cause a stroke. See your doctor if you have trouble breathing or your brain falls out of your head. It's like the list of horrible things that could happen to you from the side effects of these pharmaceutical drugs is always just scary. And I think to myself, I don't know if I would ever chance taking this drug if I could grow a third eye, if they're saying a third eye is possible. And I've always thought there has to be something or some way, or there have to be natural ways to heal out there. I mean, not everything, of course. I mean, we are talking about some people have some pretty severe illnesses, but if there's a way that we can boost our systems or help ourselves in any way that's just not going to cause your stroke or a heart attack or problems breathing, you know, I want to know about it. And of course, you know, I think about phytoplankton, I think about chlorophyll, and it's always this gorgeous green color that I just love. But you can actually see the life that's in it, or at least I can, because of that color green and just.
Oh, totally. It's very vibrant for sure. It's a vibrant green powder.
Yes.
Just almost glows.
It does. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Even in its powder state. Yeah. I know. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny going back to you talk about the pharmaceutical thing, and then I'll go talk at forums and I'll talk about these stories or like whatever. And then it's like, you know, do you have all the science? You know, they're like, you know, and it's like, dude, it's like, well, is there science on vitamin C, on vitamin B? Like, is there science on selenium and magnesium and potassium? Like that, this is all that I didn't create it. It's just a plant. That's the pure nutrition, right? So yeah, it's kind of funny that I think, unfortunately, and it's again, goes back to what I said, you know, earlier about like, you know, how are things working? Like, it's weird is that people like they go, oh, yeah, you can grow a third eye. You can think about committing suicide. You know, like your liver might fall out of your pee out your liver. And they're like, oh, maybe I'll go talk to my doctor about that. And then meanwhile, you tell something about that's pure and natural, that has a crazy track record of healing, that has no side effects. It's a natural food. And then I'm under the microscope, like I'm like trying to make $40 off of somebody. Right. I mean, this is the challenge of society. It's like that. Like, I went to go see a hypnotist, like a comedy hypnotist. And there's a guy beside me. He's like, yeah, he went up actually. And he came back and he's like, yeah, this is, you know, it's not going to work, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then the hypnotist, because we went for a break and he had said, when we go back, like the music will come on and then you're going to go to sleep and then you're going to come up and do whatever I tell you to do. Right. Well, the music came on and the guy was like, literally like this in his chair. And we're just laughing so hard. And so it's the power of the brain, right? And you just think about like newscasters, they're like, you know, and this is the bad news of the day. This is why you need to be scared of everything. And they talk like that. They talk like a freaking hypnotist. Mm-hmm. You notice that they all talk the same?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, if you're like listening to this, and you're like eating and you just got off work and your 5 o'clock entertainment is a guy telling you how bad life is. Well, sooner or later, like, you know, do they get inside your head? Like, yeah. Like are people like really like asleep? And they, you know, there's this new term that my kids always talk about called an NPC. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
The non-playing character.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you let go of your brain, if you give your spirit and your mind up to these goblins on TV, do you become an NPC and you don't even know, and you just drink whatever Kool-Aid they tell you?
Yeah.
Like I just, you know, and then your health is deteriorating, that you've been to the doctor that again, I have a million stories about this, but like, you know, they've been to their doctor 25 times. They come to phytoplankton somehow because of a friend or whatever, and they're desperate. And then all of a sudden, well, I better take this to my doctor. It's like, your doctor doesn't know about nutrition, bro. I'm sorry. Or the other thing is then all of a sudden they'll get better after 20 years of being sick. And they go, well, I just get on a new med. My doctor just gave me a new medication like 6 weeks ago. I think it's kicking in. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's probably what it is, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
You're like, yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sure.
Yeah, whether it's phytoplankton or not, right? You know what I mean? It's like they like, just the logic is completely like, it's like, whoo, you know, but whatever, right? Like, I mean, hey, you know what? It's one of those things is like, I'm not here to save the world. I really am not. You know what? I've learned through my journey. Not everybody wants to be saved. Not everybody wants to be healthier. Not everybody wants to make enough money. to pay their bills and go on a holiday. It's a choice, right? And if you think some guy on TV is going to have power over you, well, then, hey, guess what? You're going to, you know, hey, it's your life to live. Like, that's fine. You know, I think my role in life is to develop this phytoplankton enough, because I don't have enough to feed the whole world anyway. So I kind of have to go, okay, what is my mission in life? My mission in life, I think, I'm 52 now, and I don't know, but my mission in life is, I think, is just to make phytoplankton people aware about its existence and what it can do, and let the people who it resonates with take it. And if they get better and it turns into an economy down the road, way past my time, then high five. You know what I mean? I don't need, honestly, I don't want $400 billion. I don't want that lifestyle. They can, Bezos and Musk, they can have it. You know, who wants to be like that? You know, like, I don't know. I don't find that attractive. I find attractive, like, hanging out time with my family and, like, you know, my mortgage payment comes out. I don't have to really worry about it too much. Do you know what I mean? I can drive the car that I want to, but I'm not driving a Ferrari. You know, I drive a Chevy Equinox, you know, like, you know, I want to be able to go to Sedona, Arizona and go for a hike and go golfing and, like, you know, like, hang out with my friends, right? You know, and if I'm responsible for that at the end of the day, then, you know, I'll live a good life. You know, and I want my kids to be good people.
Yeah.
You know, my kids and my grandkids to be good people and not to be a bunch of jokers.
First of all, I just have to say the synchronicity of that moment when, you know, you walk in on a Monday and they say, guess what? This is what's happening. And you're no longer employed. And then the phone rings. And I love the kind of spirit and joker in you. And you think, I'm just going to take one last call. And that call has made all the difference. You know, mm-hmm. You have a very playful spirit. And that's what I appreciate about you. Picking up that phone was not malicious. It wasn't a negative thing. You just thought, I'm going to do it. And it changed your entire life. I think we need more people with playful spirits and being in the world where you see possibility everywhere. And I think that's really important, because then you see what's possible for the rest of us. And that's kind of gorgeous. So I love that story. I love, you know, and then you take this path that then changes so many people's lives. It's kind of delicious. I love it. It makes me happy. Because again, you saw possibility, you saw where this could go. But also, Tom, how funny. He's like, here's this green paste that we feed to shellfish. I'm going to start taking it. And then, I mean, Tom was kind of this beautiful guinea pig. And
yeah, I know. He was the guy. Yeah. I mean, I give all the credit to him, right? He's the one who was cultivating phytoplankton for shellfish food. He's the guy who put it in his mouth. You know, wow. He started it all. He was like, you know, and everything starts with a spark, right?
Yeah.
A fire starts with a spark. And I just happened to be there. And I think that, you know, I was the guy that had to be there.
Yeah.
To keep it going. You know what I mean? Because what he discovered was, you know, like, I mean, it's changed a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
You know,
it's life changing. It's absolutely life changing.
He's responsible for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was a fantastic boss.
I love that. Well, I would love to ask you the second question of the podcast, which that's so funny. We've been talking for about 40 minutes. But so did you grow up in a religious household? If so, what did that look like? And, you know, as you've gotten older, how was your relationship to, I mean, what if you have one? If not, great. But to like magic or mystery, how has that evolved?
Yeah, no, definitely not a religious household at all. Pretty much zero. My dad, I would ask my dad about God. And my dad said his thing was, is if there was a God, how come there's starving people in Africa?
Yeah.
That was it. Full stop. Couldn't explain to him otherwise. Right. And I think my mom, like, obviously we had Christmas and, you know, we didn't know why we're having Christmas, but we had it, or Easter. I was kind of one of those, right? It was about Santa and the Easter Bunny, not about Jesus or whatever, right? Like, I had really no clue. I think, my mom passed away from cancer when I was 20. And when she left, I had a kind of a spiritual experience, because when she wasn't there after she died, the energy was gone. It was just a carcass. Right? Like, yeah. Really. It was just her body. Like, the essence. There's a spiritual energy that every human being has. And that's gone when somebody dies. I think that's what we leave. And we don't know what it is, right? But, you know, kind of going back to, like, that Tom experience, and I've had, like, kind of a few other things kind of like that kind of happened to me, that kind of proved that there's something, right? That there's energy. So kind of going back to, like, so if I was to now have a conversation with my dad, okay? And this is what I think, but I'm not dying on the sword, okay? I'm not dying on the sword, just for somebody to say. Okay, when you look at the way that things are designed, right? It doesn't matter if you, like, whatever, we're here on the earth, as long as we're all sharing the same experience, okay? We have land and sea, you know, we have male and female, like, we have, like, you know, like, there's a lot of dualities, like, left and right, and, like, there's just a lot of twos in, yeah, Earth, okay? And I know that there can be 3, 6, 9s and all this other stuff, but there's a lot of a different, like, black and white and stuff like this. Like, they're just, there's a lot of, like, a lot of duality in things, okay? And so what I think is that the way that it's designed, and it actually goes back to what I was saying about the NPCs and being unhealthy or broke or whatever, is that I do believe that if you do the things that successful people do, you will get successful results. If you eat how healthy people eat, you will be healthy, right? I mean, and I know there's some variables, but, like, you know, you're going to be way better off than eating chips and chocolate bars and all those other things, right? You know, if you don't watch the news and hang out with people that make you happy, you will be a happier person.
Yeah.
Right? So there's certain things in there that are choices about how you carve your own path in life. And so I think that we have a sense of accountability to ourselves to honor our existence here for the time that we're here, because what happens when we take our last breath is hidden from us and we don't know. And I'm not saying that I need to suck up to God, or I really don't believe that when I pass away, that there's some omnipresent thing that's going to have a checklist and go, hey, when you were 22, you know, you stole that candy bar from the corner store, right? I don't think that's the way that it is. I just think it's more like we're here, and, like, you know, you have this chance to have whatever the life is that you want to, and whatever you feed yourself is what you're going to garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
Kind of, right? Or good things and good things, right? And I think that's just kind of designed like that. And I think, but going back to what I said earlier about intentions and all that stuff, you know, like, there's a part of it, like, that, like, I watched the political theater, and I'm just going to call that, and I don't want to get into politics because that's not what I'm trying to say here, but let's just call it political theater, right? Which is all part of the news.
Right.
And it's always negative. Like, so if you look at a news show from, like, 1968 or 1972 or 1979, the sky's falling. We're on the precipice of a major disaster. You know, this is bad. Oh, these people are bad, and we're overrun by this. It's all this same it's basically one thing that's across. It's negative.
Yes.
Negative, destructive. It's just bad on the spirit. And then you have all these guys that are supposedly in power, basically taking a piece of the action from every hardworking person on the planet. And it doesn't matter if you're a left or a right or a middle or whatever. One thing we all have in common is that we're all getting a piece of our action taken to these people that are on TV supported by all this negative information that we receive. And so I kind of go, well, you know, and of course, it's all like built into this whole thing that we're kind of like all stuck in this thing. And it's kind of like a casino a little bit where some people win, right? And you could be an advantage player, but you can be an advantage player and start taking the casino. Once you do that, then their pit boss kicks you out, right? And so like, why? And so to me, it's a business. And, you know, why would you not? I'll just talk about Canada. Why would they want to give up taking a piece of the action of like 30 million Canadians that are working? So it's a business and they're all kind of tied in together and all that stuff. And it kind of comes back with that duality thing. And like, here we are, I think as humans, I think that we are loving creatures. We love to love. I think that everybody, no matter, again, I don't care your political spectrum. It doesn't matter or your, what you like, but we all love. We have that emotion in us. I think that we're loving creatures. And like, it's like when you see a dog, like you just love the dog, like in the dog, like there's just love.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not being tapped into a little bit. And then we're all like looking at each other because of some stupid thing that we see on TV or on social media or whatever. And we're hating other people or like mad at somebody else. I don't see it. I think there's something missing there. And I think we're being manipulated a little bit. And I don't think like God is just going to come down and like save us and show up and go, oh, hey, God's here. Cool. He's going to clean house. I think it's within us that like in I think the metaphor of the Tower of Babel is actually a good metaphor, is that if they just keep like grinding and grinding and grinding us, that we're not going to care if you're a Democrat or a Republican anymore. We're going to go, hey, we need to band together and like do something about it. And hopefully it's not even about killing, because then also too is like, we always have all this history that we've always been killing ourselves for the last thousands of years. But like, I never thought about killing anybody. Like, that's such a stretch. Like, who wants to kill somebody? Like, you know what I mean? It's like murder is just rampant. We got to watch out for the murderer. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Okay. But the only people who really actually like push buttons on murder are the people at the top. They get people fighting against each other and we think it's cool to get a gun and shoot somebody we don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just think that we're not designed like that. And I think we're being manipulated is what I'm saying. I think we're not tapping into here, like our spirit and the loving nature that we naturally have.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but I just know how I feel. And I just don't like people fighting over politics, you know, just or whatever. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, right? Me either. It's exhausting.
Super is exhausting. It's just really, you know what, really, it doesn't matter what's that. All as it is that in both sides, they both just care about spending money on different things. That's all it is. There's got to be somewhere in the middle. Like, really, it's basically they're taking all our money and then we want these people to take our money and spend it on something that we like more than that side.
Yeah.
Pretty simple, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway,
thank you.
I think that's what it is.
Thank you. I like that. I have not had that answer yet. So I understand what you're saying. I totally agree with all of it. I really think it's powerful that when your mother passed away, that you know, that evanescence that was her, that elemental quintessence that was her was no longer there. And it struck you. And you recognized it. And I think that's so powerful, also heartbreaking. And I'm so sorry about the loss of your mother. I'm very sorry about that. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. But you know what? I'll tell you what, though, is that she's given me a lot of signs that they're still around.
Oh, well, you know, my final question of the podcast is, would you share some stories of things that are, you know, magical or mysterious? So if you'd like to share a couple of those, I'd love to hear them.
Okay. Well, okay. So the preamble of this is that I believe within 1,000% that when loved ones leave us, they become guardian angels. I think that they're not gone. And yes, it's upsetting, but we just don't know. It might be not a bad thing because, again, if you're in your mother's womb and then you're going to come out like you're all warm and happy in mother's womb and then you come out to here, you don't know what it is. You can't explain to a baby what it is out here, right? So anyway, I'll share with you two stories that to me proved. And things happened to my sister, too, which is okay, because I also lost my dad a little bit later, but that's okay, because it's the stories are the two. So there's been a few times in my business journey, okay, that I've been really struggling, like where it hasn't been easy, okay, and just, you know, whatever, right? Your dad trying to get things going and all that stuff is this not exactly all like fun and games all the time, right? And you get yourself in some sticky situations, mostly financial. And so I was in Sedona, Arizona, and I was golfing. Okay. And my dad actually got me into golf. And that was a gift that he left with me. And I absolutely love golf. It means a lot to me. And I was golfing in Sedona at a par 3, and I had a bright red ball. Okay. Now, before that, I was kind of talking to mom and dad up in heaven, you know, going, hey, I need a sign here. I feel really lonely. Like, I think I'm going to hit a brick wall. I'm just going to golf in Sedona. And if I burn all my money doing it, I'm going to do it. I need some help, right? I started talking to them. I did. I was by myself. I was talking to mom and dad on the golf course. About 10 minutes later, I hit this red ball on a par 3. And it just completely disappeared. I totally didn't know where it was. Okay. And I'm like looking around and like, I park my thing and I walk past the green. I go and I'm looking in the bushes. I thought, okay, did I hit it in the yard? Did I hit it over here? I like totally like, cause I was so confused. It was just a par 3 and it's a bright red ball. How could it disappear? Okay. And then, so I walked past the green. I was looking in the neighbor's yard after like I went left and right and everywhere. Okay. I turned around to go back to go get another ball and go, okay, I'm just going to drop a ball and whatever, right? Taking my penalty and blah, blah. And the ball was in the absolute center of the green. Like bright red ball in the absolute dead effing center. Like, I was just like, what the fuck? You know, like, oh my God. I asked for it. Right. And I'm like, okay, we're good. Okay. Well, guess what? Obviously I'm still here. I got out of the jam. Right. It was just wow. What I needed. Right. And then there was another time, again, I was golfing and cause that's kind of the time I'm by myself. It's my meditation. Right. I got myself into another jam. Right. Shocker. It's a business. And so I go to dad and I go, dad, like, you know, and I'm talking to dad, I'm not talking to mom. I'm not talking to mom. I'm just talking to him. Like, dad, like, you know, here's my situation. I need some help. I know you're there from the Sedona thing, right? I'm acknowledging it. And again, my sister has stories, but I can't say it quite like her. But like, I said, give me a sign, right? I said, I know you're there, but I said, if you give me another sign, then I will never doubt. Because I'm kind of doubting right now because this log jam that I'm in is really hurting, right? And anyway, so I was on the hole 8, the hardest hole in the course, and I've never even parred this hole before, okay? And my second shot went past the thing, and I was like literally behind a tree, okay? Like behind a tree, big tree root. I mean, it was like the impossible of impossible shot, right? And again, and so keep in mind, I was talking to my dad about three holes before this, and I kind of almost forgot that I did it. Okay. And I'm a lefty. And then, so anyway, I hit the ball and it kind of like hit the root, it hit the tree, and then it flew onto the green. And then the green's like the worst green in the world. It's like tilted like this, and the ball just went like this, like this, like this, like this, and then started turning, and I was like, pop. And I'm like, and I birdied the hole. I'm like, oh my God, no way. I got to ask for this every hole. I'm going to be a scratch golfer. Like, and I'm like, okay. Like, I mean, this does not, if you're a golfer, you understand this does not happen. This does not happen. And it happened again. Right. And I'm like, okay, we're good. I'm just going to trip. So now I'm just going to trust. Right. So now I'm just kind of more like when I talk to them, I'm kind of more just saying hi. Cause we're good. I don't need another one. You know what I mean? And my sister had stuff, and like, yeah, like, I mean, even kind of going back to the Tom thing, and like, you know, I had one guy one time that screwed me out of a bunch of money over this brand, phytoplankton brand that I created. And I was kind of, I was so pissed off. I was so mad that this guy took me for all this money and all that stuff. And the brand was called Gesundheit. It was called Gesundheit Phytoplankton. It was the first brand I actually took, and I had a guy fucking steal it from me. Excuse my language, but like, it was, he pissed me off still today. And I was like totally like pretty much like so mad. And then I remember I was like kind of screaming in the car, like hitting the steering wheel, you know, that, you know, like I was mad at myself more than him. Cause I kind of let it happen a little bit because I was naive. And the voice in my head came to me. It was almost like mom was like right beside me in the car and said, "You are not Gesundheit." That was the voice in my head. It was like, somebody told me that. I'm like, what the, like, what? Right. And that's all it was. Like there was nothing else. So it said, "You are not Gesundheit." And like, so since then, I've launched like multiple brands with like multiple different people, and I've spread my risk out. So yes, I have my own brand, but like I have like other people doing my own brand. So that's kind of the message I got from that. So that's kind of another thing. So it just tells me that they're still there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think if you tap into it, you got to let it go. You got to believe it. Right. And you know what? I think we all have a guardian angels, and I don't think that there's something I would just suggest to people, like, you know, we all know who our guardian angels might be. You know what? Talk to them in private. Let them show you that they're still there. You might be surprised. It's happened to me enough that I just don't doubt it anymore.
Everyone, that's a wrap on my conversation with David Hunter. I think you can tell that the two of us got along, and I really enjoyed getting to know him. It's clear to me that David is in the swing of things, in that synchronicity abounds in his life. He's open to magical occurrences and witnessing them and incorporating them and understanding them. And that, once again, I'm going to say it again, he lives close to the soul of the world. And so I really do think David is one of those people that we can look at, because he's a fine example of what our lives can look at if we too choose to live close to the soul of the world. I hope you've been enjoying all the content I've been putting out. I'm really trying to bring you fabulous human beings to remind you with every conversation that this world is peopled with so many splendid human beings, and that they outweigh the negative Nellies every single time. To find out about David and do a deeper dive on his life, there will be links in the episode show notes, so be sure not to miss those links. I'm so grateful to him for coming on the show and for sharing all his stories and being so open and so honest and so raw. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. I'm always asking for ratings and reviews, so if you like what you hear, please do consider leaving a rating or writing a little review. I mean, I'm always groveling for these things, so if you find it in your heart to do it, please take the time to do so. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like David. I mean, I think David approaches life with this incredibly playful spirit, and in that way, it's also an incredibly generous spirit, and it's almost as if life reacts in kind, and that life responds to David in a playful way, and that life responds to David in a generous way, because that is how David orients himself towards it. And I think it would behoove all of us to look at the ways that we interact with life, the ways we mirror back to life, who we are, or what we want, or what we dream of. I think each and every one of us can cultivate a playful and generous relationship with life, and I think that many of the people I know already do. But David has faith, and I think once you mix the faith in that little concoction, the sky's the limit for you. So my wish for every single one of us is that we approach life with the same playful, generous spirit, that we have faith in the universe and the reality around us, and that living in this way will bring each of us so much beauty and so much bounty. So go out there and be like David. Be playful, be generous, have faith, and then, you know what? I want to hear about it. I want to hear how your life changes. You know me. I'm a glutton for these kinds of stories. So yeah, with that, have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Thank you.